Welcome to the Immigrant Stories Program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Elizabeth Boomhauer. I met Elizabeth at her home in Parachute in February of 2009. She was 88 years old at the time and had trouble getting around, but she insisted on making me a bowl of ramen, which was such a sweet gesture. But when I sat down with Elizabeth and began to hear her story, I realized how important and symbolic the gesture of that bowl of soup was. Elizabeth was born in Holland, now known as the Netherlands, in September of 1920. Her father was a career military officer, a first lieutenant in the Dutch Army, and her mother worked at home. Life was good until that day in the summer of her 19th year, May 1940, when the Germans jumped out of the sky and took her country. We started our interview talking about the day in the spring of 1960, 20 years after that day in 1940, when she docked in her new home, the United States of America, Hoboken, New Jersey.
My name is Elizabeth Johanna Boomhauer. Born Grotendorst, a real Dutch name, but I'm Dutch Portuguese.
How'd you get the Portuguese side?
From my forefamily, and I will show you some photos later on. I came to the United States March the 1st, 1960, on the arm of my American soldier husband. You know the word GI, and he wasn't GI. He did all of his job for the United States, fighting wars all over the place. And that is how come I was proud to stand by him in his hard life. The life we had together was not easy, not in the beginning, but it got better as we went on. And I had a son from my first husband who was a lazy novelist in Holland, didn't want to work and thought that I would do everything. I took my first child under my arm and left. And I did not get in touch with Ronald Boomhauer till I got on the American Air Force Base in Soesterberg, Holland. And then, in the beginning, he never saw me, I never saw him, because he was always drunk. And it was not till about 3/4 year later, after we had gone to my hometown best restaurant, and he pulled out all his cards, all the cards about his life, that he said, "This is who I am. You want to marry me?" And I told him, "I want to wait 3 weeks to make sure that this is what I want to do. And before that, I want you to meet my son and make sure that you guys are going to like each other. That is more important than what I think at this moment." So, okay, there were 3 weeks in between. My upcoming husband met our son, who was in that time 2 years old, and in a Salvation Army home, because I had to work long hours. And when that came out good, pretty soon after that, we were married. And he had an extension in Holland for 4 years, so we did not come to the United States till March the 1st, 1960. But I've been here ever since, and I love it.
Do you remember coming to the United States that
yes,
day?
Yes, yes.
Tell me about arriving in the United States.
On board of the Holland American Line boat the Rotterdam. And on the sea, I was seasick for 11 days. And since we had a baby girl and my first son, I was laid up and I had a French stewardess who looked after me. But my little son, who was old enough by that time to go into the dining room and bring me some apples and crackers, I was beginning to feel better. But not till I got into Hoboken did I have the feeling, okay, I'm in the United States.
You were feeling better by then?
Yeah.
Once you got...
Yeah. And from there on, we went to Goldsboro for quite a while.
Where's Goldsboro?
North Carolina. That was where I got my third child, Charlie.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Elizabeth Boomhauer is remembering her immigration from Holland to the United States and her adjustment to her new soldier husband, as both of them desperately try to shed the trauma of World War II and find true love and happiness. Can I take you back to Holland when you talked about this novelist, the first husband who was lazy and didn't really want to do anything and had you do everything?
Yeah.
When you, what was it that finally made you decide that you just had to leave?
You won't believe this. He did not want to work. He was going to sit down on weekends and write something. And he had written a book. That's true. But he was too lazy to stand up, and I'm so glad that I took my little boy under my arm and left.
So you got custody, sole custody
of
your child.
Of my oldest boy.
Where did you do? Where did you go when...
I started all over again. I started with nothing. I worked in my hometown best restaurant while the child was in the Salvation Army home. Till somebody told me, hey, you can do better than this and you can make a lot more money. Why don't you go to work for the American Air Base in Soesterberg? That's how come we got into touch with each other.
So how did you meet him?
Well, just like I told you, in the beginning I saw 250 other men around me and not this one because he was always drunk. And it was not till he was sober, after we had met by the fire in that restaurant, that he put out all his ID cards and asked me, this is who I am, will you marry me?
So it was his ID cards that...
Yeah.
What was it about his ID cards that were supposed to be, was it his...
Well, I believe that he was legit, huh?
Ah.
Anything with cards, and especially these days, you have to have paperwork. You have to have cards here and there and everywhere.
So he was showing you that he was legitimate.
Yeah.
And and you kind of liked him anyway, though, right? It wasn't just his cards.
When I saw that he could be sober, too, that was a whole different story. I said to myself, this guy is worth trying out with. See, I called it trying out. Yeah.
An experiment.
Right. And I'm glad we did. And 5 years before he died, he was done with cigarettes and he was done with beer. He had healed up and he had cleansed up all the way.
Huh.
And we had had wonderful times. And most of the time at dinner time, either at home or eating out. Because eating out in America is an experience all by itself.
Tell me about that. What was your image of America and eating out coming from Holland?
Oh, completely different. And I mean, working on the base as a short order cook, which I did for a while, I thought it made so much sense to have a hamburger with vegetables on top. Well, in Europe, everything is mostly sweet and is mostly cake and stuffy things.
Uh-huh.
Not enough fresh food. The only good thing they make in Europe is pea soup. Pea soup with ham, pea soup with sausage.
So what was, did you like eating out in the United States, or was it peculiar?
I love eating out here.
Because everything was so bland.
The variety of different things from different countries.
When you landed in Hoboken,
yeah,
that first day,
I had to come.
What was that like?
Riding to the big station.
Uh-huh.
Pennsylvania station. So $5 here, $5 there for taxi cabs. And then the night train to North Carolina.
You went, so you went to the base in North Carolina.
Right. And my husband, at that time, had fought an officer. He lost all his stripes. So he had to start from the beginning. Which was not easy on me at all. Because we lived in a place full of cockroaches. Which I'm not used to in Holland, because everything is clean. And I am from an officer's family. So this was a new experience. But nevertheless, you just go on, you keep on breathing, and you don't give up.
Definitely. So you walked in and this place was a mess, dirty and cockroaches. Your husband had lost
his stripes, had to start all over again. And I mean, you felt that in the salary too.
Yes. Were you angry with him? You'd already married him by then.
Well, as long as he behaved otherwise. I had to teach him not to drink around me. The first thing I did was take a beer bottle and give him a nice slap on the neck. Because you're not doing this around me.
You got his attention.
And that's it. And he really did not bother around me with drinking too much. But we went on, and it got better as we went. And I mean, in the beginning, with little children, it was not easy. Because you have to bring up kids right. And I mean, in Holland, you do bring up your children right. The family is the family, and the family is good. So, but I did. I brought them up, and they helped themselves getting further and did all very well, and I am very proud at what the family is now. You can look at them and you don't believe what we went through. Yes. In order to get there.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Elizabeth Boomhauer is remembering the early years in the United States with her husband Roy and their three kids. Adjusting to a new life in a new country wasn't easy for Elizabeth, but in many ways it was a relief for her from the memories of the Netherlands and the 5 years of brutal war, cold winters, and forced starvation. A starvation that the Dutch often refer to as the Dutch famine, one of the most difficult times in the history of the Netherlands. You have been through a lot. Tell me about growing up and some of the hardships that you endured as a young girl.
I went through all of World War II in the Netherlands. And in the beginning, it didn't look so bad, but it got worse as the war went on, as we went under the German heel. I was 19 when we started out. And in May 1940, the Dutch soldiers came one more time together. And I helped peel potatoes for that day for them to do their last big meal before we had to give it all up. I had a job always in the wartime, as long as I could keep up with it. But every time there was less and less to eat, and there came a day, February 1942, that there was nothing to eat anymore, and we lived for the rest of our life on water. And it can be done. I show it, I'm here. And maybe having water for 3 years cleanses you up so well that you can't get any stronger from it, but you're clean. You're cleansed out.
From February 1942.
Yeah.
There
till was... Till May 7, 1945.
There was
we
no
lived
food.
On water.
What sort of things would you try to put in the water?
We began to try to find something in nature to eat. And one of the first things I did, and we had what you call emergency stoves. You put a can with a roaster in it on top of your home stove. You put a little bit of wood splinters in there, and if you could get it to fire, then you could put a pan of water on there and you could so-called cook something. So the first things I cooked were sting nettles, and you could eat them. And that was vitamin A.
So you were eating the weeds and that's anything it. Else you could find?
Eat weeds.
When you said that in May 1940 was when you had to give it all up.
Yeah.
Describe what was going on then.
Our city, Amersfoort, Amersfoort, were evacuated to the seashore. And we lived in that old hotel over there. And at that time, there was still good food to eat. But after that, things got worse and worse and worse. And even in a job that I got with some family in one of the nicer parts of Holland, they had dehydrated kale, if you ever heard about that. And they had old milk powder. They had milk powder in boxes. And nowadays, nobody would have used it. I had to boil and chop that kale for those children and fed them milk out of that milk powder, just water and milk powder. And one of the children was sick and had lice, head lice. And all I could do for the child was putting cloth with kerosene on her head in order to kill those lice. And we didn't even have soap in that time anymore to really clean that up.
So it was miserable.
Very miserable.
And the Germans were cutting
up. The Germans, meanwhile, were all over the place, but very regimented. And if you didn't look at them, they wouldn't look at you.
They ignored you and you ignored them, but yeah. they were responsible for your food going away, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they fed us some slosh in a pan, and you never knew what you were going to get. At one time it was unedible because it tasted like carbolium.
Tasted like petroleum then.
Yeah. Just like I say, a slosh of something in a pan. They had a stand in line and they called that being fed.
Were they brutalizing people and being cruel, or were they just ignoring and going about their occupation?
No, they ignored us. We were no more than the stones on the ground, you know.
Do you remember the day of liberation?
Yes. And that was when there was still a big fight in my hometown. The Germans that had been in the bottom of the bank still took their guns and killed some of the Dutch people. May 7, 1945.
Do you remember how you found out about the liberation? What were you doing that day?
Oh, we had been sitting in cupboards in our homes. The first birthday of Queen Wilhelmina, my father still had the flag out, the Dutch flag, and the police, the Dutch police, came by and said, "Grotendorst, we don't want to say do it or don't do it, but we advise you to better take the flag in and not upset their apple cart."
The Germans.
Yeah.
So did he? Did he?
He did. Your father took it in. But they were still sitting in the cupboards to hear the BBC.
So when you say sitting in the cupboards in a closed space so people didn't know you were listening to the radio, and that's when you heard.
And that is how come when I got with the Americans, they knew that I was clean from the beginning. And that's how come in 5 weeks I was on the base murdering hamburgers. That's what I called it.
Murdering hamburgers.
Yeah, I took some doing before I really...
When you say they knew you were clean, what do you mean by that? How did they know? You mean that you weren't a sympathizer, that you
yeah.
were... How did they know?
Well, in that time, at least the princesses, Beatrix and the other princesses, were in Ottawa.
These are the Dutch princesses.
Yeah. And the queen was somewhere else, but they were not in Holland. They were out of Holland in that time.
Yeah, I suppose you wouldn't want to be in Holland be royalty
it.
At that time.
That's it.
So still, how did the Americans know that you weren't a sympathizer, a German sympathizer? Just from everything you knew?
Right.
They knew that you'd been listening to the
right.
BBC.
Yep.
So you've known hardship. So North Carolina
was no big deal. I have known hardships. Yeah.
Tell me about your parents. What were they like? It sounds like your father was fairly defiant, flying the Dutch flag during the German occupation.
Yeah, and my father came close to get in a scrap with the Germans in Utrecht, because he had opened his mouth. Father was an officer, and he went to the barber shop and got his hair done, and there was a traitor sitting there who had belonged to his squadron. And my father had to come to the commandantur in Utrecht, and we at home kept our fingers crossed to hope that he would be back in the evening. And lucky enough, he did. It was not fierce enough. If it had been 6 weeks later, we might have all been in concentration camp. And luckily, we were no Jews, and they didn't know that part of us were gypsies. We are authentic gypsies, originally.
So what the Germans didn't know was that you had gypsy blood.
Otherwise they wouldn't have liked it, and they would have put me in concentration camp too.
What was your mother like?
Mother was very Dutch, from the Kamper Eiland, farm country. And good, nice.
When you say she's very Dutch, does that mean that she's very proper?
Proper and not too intelligent. I've got the intelligence from my father's side of the family.
I see.
I figure that I'm doing pretty good.
But your father was the defiant one, huh?
Yeah.
That must have worried your mother at times when your father...
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
when there's Germans walking around.
My father was really something. Mother was the best at going out and buying clothes for us. She liked that best, taking us to Utrecht and going to CNA Brenningmeyer, buying us clothes. And then going out for lunch, of course, because we all loved lunches. Yeah.
So did times get better after the liberation?
Very slowly. Yeah.
When you went back after liberation, back to your, because you were driven to the sea, right? Or were you living in your house?
We were back in the house in the hometown.
When liberation
came. We all
came
back. And I'll never forget the day that we came back to our hometown. All the animals, whether it was cockatoos, cats or dogs, they were all running loose in the city.
What was that
because
like?
Because nobody had had the chance to look after them.
So the animals were all
loose
and on
it
the run?
It was animal town.
Was your house a mess?
No, the house had been left alone. It was locked up, so.
So looking back on that experience as an immigrant and that experience in the war, how has that shaped your life?
I just wanted to get out of there. And not because I don't love Holland, I still love Holland. And I would like to go over there one more time.
That was Elizabeth Boomhauer. Elizabeth never made it back to Holland. She died 2 years later in 2011. But I'll never forget the day where she welcomed me into her home and offered me a bowl of soup and a story. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Thanks so much for listening.